Welcome to the Investing Tutor Podcast, the show for professionals looking to master the most up-to-date strategies needed to build wealth and provide a stable financial future. Here's your host, Dr. Hans Boateng.
Hey friends, Dr. Hans here, the Investing Tutor, and I have an incredible episode for you today. So this is part two of the Bitcoin crypto episode, and we have Chris back. We're looking to touch on, you know, a few topics with Bitcoin and transition into altcoins. I want to see his thoughts about, you know, Doge, Ethereum, a few others. So you all, without further ado, help me welcome back Chris. Chris, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Welcome. Welcome everybody to my second podcast in my life.
Chris, since we last spoke, Ethereum has been on a rocket ship.
Oh my gosh. Crazy. What are you?
So before we explain what Ethereum is, let's just kind of have just a discussion on what are your thoughts so far when you see Ethereum kind of having gained almost 40% in about a week?
Kind of studying this for a few years now, you notice the same trend, and the longer you stay in crypto, you'll start to see what I see. And that trend typically is when Bitcoin goes sideways, meaning that the price kind of stays within a relatively stable range, stable quote unquote, right? Because it's cryptocurrency. But as Bitcoin goes sideways, you tend to have a delayed reaction and a surge in these alternative coins, and Ethereum being one of those top dogs. You can see it right now. Ethereum is absolutely surging, and it's happened many times over, especially in the bull run back in 2017 and 18. And it's happening again. I think Bitcoin's been going sideways for about 3, maybe 4 weeks now, you know, ranging from 61,000 down to, I think the lowest might have been 48, but for the most part in the mid 50s. And as that was happening, just recently, over the past week and a half to 2 weeks, Ethereum starts to, I don't know really why, but the trend always happens. Ethereum starts shooting up. And I think there's some speculation as to why that happens. A lot of these big market players are trying to, you know, capture some arbitrage, they're trying to capture some spread on some swing trading, a lot of fancy, you know, terms that they're throwing around there in these places I'm learning. But essentially, when Bitcoin's going sideways, they're throwing their money elsewhere. And the next big player is Ethereum. And so you see that start to pump.
Yeah. Do you believe that there's a possibility that Ethereum can reach or surpass Bitcoin's market cap?
There's always that possibility. I don't foresee that in the near future by any means. And the reason I say that is because Bitcoin still owns about 50% of the entire market cap of all of the cryptos. And Ethereum, if you took its piece of the pie, it's about maybe 25-35%. So it still has a ways to go just to even compete with Bitcoin. And you also have to think of Bitcoin and Ethereum as two different crypto assets. I guess you could look at Bitcoin as that digital gold that we kind of touched on and kind of how people are describing it as. But you should look at Ethereum as something completely different. It's not trying to be Bitcoin. It's trying to be a platform in which you can build upon many, many different projects that are decentralized to some extent and have a completely different purpose. It's almost like blockchain is the invention of the automobile, and Bitcoin is one version of an automobile. For example, I'll say like it's like a tank, right? It's indestructible. It's just plowing over anyone who stands in its way for one particular reason. But Ethereum is like, it's not a tank. It's a different type of automobile. I don't know, a Ferrari, if you want to say.
Ferrari was going to mine.
right. And so when you're looking at these two different crypto things, you have to ask yourself the right question. right? You can't just say which crypto is best. That's like saying which automobile is best. Well, it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. So I think Ethereum has the chance to gain enough traction to perhaps equal or surpass the market cap of Bitcoin. But I think by the time that happens, there's going to be a massive amount of change in the amount of adoption that Bitcoin is going to accomplish. And it too is going to have rocket fuel behind it. So I think it's a very small possibility that Ethereum can surpass Bitcoin. And one final point is there's a lot of people coming after Ethereum with better projects that they think does a better job than Ethereum. Right. And so they're going to be chomping at the heels of Ethereum's market cap. They're going to be eating away at the market cap of Ethereum. So Ethereum not only has to try and surpass the market cap of Bitcoin, but it's got competitors that have seen Ethereum's faults. It's looking at Ethereum's weakness, for example, the high gas fees and yada, yada, yada. And it says, I can do a better job. Why don't everyone jump ship from programming stuff from Ethereum and come and join my platform? And so people may migrate to that. So there's a low probability, I think, of Ethereum being number one spot in terms of market cap. And if it ever gets that high, Bitcoin is going to have some serious jet rocket fuel ahead of it.
So what are the competitors coming after Ethereum? I know that Cardano is one possibility. Do you know of any others?
Yeah, so another one is Polkadot. When Ethereum was created, it was created by one of the founders. The original founder was Vitalik Buterin, and you can look him up. He's like a scrawny, gangly little guy, but really smart when it comes to computer science and creating this Ethereum. I mean, you have to be just an absolute genius to dedicate your time to make something like this. But in addition, he had a team of many smart mathematicians, engineers, computer scientists who are also working on Ethereum to make it what it is today. And during its early years, some of its founders, such as Charles Hoskinson, broke away from Ethereum and created Cardano. And Cardano is that example I was talking about, or at least one of them, where they look at Ethereum and he says, I think I can do a better job. I think these are there are many different issues with Ethereum at this time and at this place. And I think Cardano can do a better job at being decentralized, unstoppable, less, you know, expensive to use and, you know, energy efficient, whatever. In addition, there's Polkadot, same thing. There's another founder who worked on Ethereum. I forgot the name escapes me, but he too was working alongside Vitalik during the Ethereum early years, and he broke away and created Polkadot. And those are the top two, I would say, competitors that are looking at the prince, Ethereum, and trying to take his seat. And they both have good platforms that you really need like a PhD to fully understand what they're trying to accomplish. But broad strokes, if you just take a step back and listen to these founders and their mission statement, they're basically trying to create a platform just like Ethereum, but to do a better job at it.
So for someone who isn't, let's say, familiar with the crypto world and they are wondering, like, what is Ethereum? Often I like to say, perhaps it's like, you know, iOS or Android, or maybe even the App Store, or maybe even like a Windows operating system. How do you describe or define Ethereum to, you know, the average person?
Sure. That's a great example. I didn't think of it that way. I would also say it could be like Linux, you know, it's like a programming language, right? And someone had to make this language in which we can build computer programs on, right? When nowadays, when we hop on our computer, we click on an icon, it takes us to a website, it starts a game. It just runs things. When you open your Android phone and you swipe left, click an app, it just runs. But if you dissect and dive deep into the code and you look at that wacky language that they use, that's Linux, right? And that example is very much like Ethereum. Ethereum is a language or a platform in which when you understand it and learn it and learn how to speak the language, you can also create programs that will create things more than is humanly possible right now. And so you use programming language. I'll tell a lot of people, if Bitcoin is digital gold, I also use the example, what I tell my friends is Ethereum is like digital oil. We go out and we use oil for so many different things, right? You can take oil out of the ground, chemically change it, and you can make any plastic in the world. Think of anything that's made of plastic, and oil is because of that. Or if you want to look at your cars that run high octane, low octane, rocket fuel, oil is because of that, right? And that's what Ethereum is. It is a base layer of language on which humans can build upon it, a network that has the ability to become decentralized and be owned by the people. And when I say that, people in America are like, I can create my own, I can create my own website, like whoop-de-doo, Chris, you know, like you're not impressing me. And I don't think you understand. Like when Donald Trump got censored and Twitter says, you're off of our website. And when the App Store kicked off Parler and Amazon Web Service didn't want to use Parler or any of those apps with Donald Trump associated with it. That is a centralized network. All the things that we use, like Twitter and things that use Amazon Web Services, we are asking permission for those programs to do something for us. And when they don't like you and they can boot you out, like they did censoring Donald Trump, they can do it. Now imagine a platform where I build using the language of Ethereum, right? Or Cardano or whatever, a decentralized language platform. And I create a different Twitter, right? I call it, you know, something else. Right? I'll call it Twitter 2. But this time, no one can boot me out, right? Because nobody actually, there's no headquarters. When the government says you need to shut this down, there's no headquarters. Good luck. We run in the internet. We run throughout all of the internet. So if you just shut down my computer, guess what? Every other computer has this ability to run this language. It's fascinating. It's weird. It's this concept that's like really hard to grasp. And it almost sounds like some rebellion, you know, like, oh, we have the capability to, you know, stick it to the man if we don't like how the government's run or something like that. But essentially that's Ethereum. It's a language in which you can build platforms that are decentralized if you want them to be decentralized. And some of them don't have to be. You can have a governing body for whatever application you want on there, and people can opt in to participate in it or not. They can just move on with their life. It's just another avenue of creativity.
So looking at Ethereum, what would you say are some of the big projects that, you know, some of these tokens are working on, right? So I know of DeFi. Mm-hmm. Are there any others?
So DeFi, short for decentralized finance, is a field that is massively, it's going to be coming up big time. The idea being, if you have ever been discriminated against or have been incapable of the right to finances, whether that means to get a loan, whether that means to get a mortgage, you know, there's a lot of people where you go to a bank and ask for these things and they shut the door on you. You don't even have access to get into the front door, let alone actually get a good rate. And so Ethereum is the programming language in which people are building decentralized finance platforms so that anyone, doesn't matter your identity, your creed, religion, race, background, location, can go onto this area, this platform in the internet, and search for finance opportunities, banking opportunities. And it's a bit rough around the edges right now, but it is possible. Another way is another idea in decentralized finance is you can, if you bought Bitcoin early, you can actually put your Bitcoin up into a platform. And just like a bank, they will take your Bitcoin and they will loan it out to other people who want your Bitcoin. And in turn, those people who are borrowing your Bitcoin will pay you back your Bitcoin at the end of the contract, whichever you guys agreed upon, and you get interest back. It's locked up safely through the power of Ethereum blockchain and Bitcoin blockchain. And, you know, you're able to basically put your Bitcoin out there for people to loan, to use it, to get quick capital, to quickly liquefy and get money if they're in a pinch. You know,
the fascinating thing, Chris, you know, right now, most people don't realize that when they put their hard-earned money, right, fiat currency in a bank, the bank then turns around and lends that money out. But
yeah,
the bank is not even paying people for that, for using their money to make money.
Yes.
Today, I was thinking about it. I was like, the world is going to shift so quickly when they find out that if they convert fiat to a stable currency or a dollar, a stable, you know, USDC, which is a stable US dollar token, or they convert their money to Ethereum, Bitcoin, and they stake it. What that means is that you are allowing, like Chris was saying, your exchange to then go use your money to make money. They pay you anywhere from, I've seen 7% to 8% to 9%. And no one is going to leave their money at a bank when they can be safely, even USDC, US dollar coin, he's paying about 5% or 6%
just to hold it.
It is unthinkable. So and many people are probably listening, and Chris, you know, we are really into this, so we see what's happening. But people are like, wait, what do you mean? US dollar coin? Yeah. Why are they paying me? The bank is using your money, your hard-earned money that you're working for. They are taking it, lending it out, creating mortgages, creating credit cards, and they are not giving you even a cent.
They give you a fraction of a percent.
That's even if people put it in a savings account, Chris. If you leave it in a checking account, you're not getting even a cent.
I know. You get nothing. I asked my friend, I said, how do you think a bank is created? And they said, well, they get a lot of money from the government. I said, step one, you're wrong.
Yeah.
They do it. The bank says, I ask the government for a banking license. They pay some fees. The United States government says, okay, you owe us some money. Now go be productive. So the Bank of Chris is created. So you know what I do? I go to Dr. Hans. I go to your neighbor. I go to everybody in your neighborhood. And I say, hey guys, give me your money. Let me hold your money nice and safe in my little vault, right? And if everyone gives me $100, let's say 10 people give me $100, I now have $1,000 in the bank of Chris. Do you know what Chris does? Chris goes out and he goes to other banks. He goes to other big companies and says, hey, man, I got all these people's money. I want to create some projects and I want to make some money. So I just took your money and I am lending it out, or I'm creating projects myself so that I can start generating money. And then if you turn around, Dr. Hans, and ask Bank of Chris, hey, you guys are making money off my hard-earned dollar that I'm keeping in there, can I have a little bit of that profit? The Bank of Chris is going to look at you and laugh in your face and say, no, I'm sorry, bro. Ain't going to happen, right? This is crazy. It blows my mind when people actually sit back and look at it and understand there's an alternative. Slowly and then suddenly, people will start to understand. Maybe banks are getting old, man.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, not to divert, but I just thought about something that I heard today with regards to Bitcoin, right? Mm-hmm. And it was Michael Saylor. He was saying that the moment that insurance companies realize that instead of, you know, buying bonds and these other assets to hedge risk, mm-hmm. if they can purchase some Bitcoin, all of a sudden the money that they are holding in treasury, right, is going to be growing at such a fast pace that they can cut the cost of insurance down by 10 mm-hmm. or provide an insurance like a life insurance policy where a person pays maybe $1,000 or $2,000 once, and the policy covers them for the entirety of their life because of the amount of growth that they are going to have in all of those assets when they factor in that, let's say, maybe 90% of people are not really going to claim on this money. So imagine, so 90% of those funds can be placed into, a portion of it can be placed into Bitcoin, and the returns that they will have far exceeds by a magnitude what they'll get from bonds. And in essence, they can make insurance products cheaper, from mm-hmm. car insurance to life insurance to health insurance. And when he was explaining this, I was like, whoa, once these financial companies even realize that they don't have an option, they have to buy Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever it is, man, it's gonna take the world by storm. People are gonna see Bitcoin just growing exponentially in terms of the use case and the adoption, and they are gonna wonder what happened. So I'm glad that we can have kind of like, you know, this dialogue and educate individuals.
Yeah. These people, like, you know, just for your audience, like, understand what is the purpose of an insurance company, whether that mean for annuities when you die and the, you know, that company has to pay out your family for your daughter's college fund or Princeton's college fund, right? If Dr. Hans is paying life insurance, he's paying for the privilege so that it, heaven forbid he dies, his family is set for life. So that company is not picking risky assets that are going to disappear. They're not taking everybody's money and putting it in a savings account or a savings bank where it's only going to generate a fraction of a percent in return. No. They need to make that money make more money. And it needs to make money for a long, long, long time. And what it used to be was that a large portion of what these insurance companies would have, let's say out of 100%, they put 20, 30, 40, 50% into US treasuries and bonds, meaning I'm going to pay the government some money. I'm going to give them some money, and they're going to guarantee me my money back with a little bit of interest by the end of 10, 15, 20, 25 years. The longer I wait, the better the interest rate I get back. The problem is now, we're reaching a point where over the past, you can Google it, over the past 40, 50, 60, 70 years, especially over the past 10, 15 years, the interest rate that the government gives you back in profit for those 10-year bonds, for those 15-year treasury bills, for those 20-year, it's less and less and less and less. So these big insurance companies who have to have money 30, 40, 50, 60 years down the road, they're not looking next year. They're looking decades, generations ahead. And they see what's coming. They see, oh, shoot, what I used to put 50% of my, 40% of my portfolio, it used to give me 10, 8% return, which was nice. Now it's only giving me 3%. Where else am I going to start making up that difference, right? I have to choose riskier assets. besides bonds, you have to look into equities. You have to look into stocks. You know, they might hire Dr. Hans. Be like, yo, man, you got to tell us where we got to put our money. That's going to be safe enough, but we're not going to lose it, right? And cryptocurrency is forcing itself to have a seat at the table at this conversation where big life insurances, these big guys, they're all sitting at these big fancy mahogany tables. And they're saying, guys, we're not getting the same amount of return on the US Treasury bond here. It's just not happening. Where are we going to make up the difference? And all of a sudden, someone whispers the word cryptocurrency or Bitcoin. And the more they learn about it, the more they start getting in. And it's already happening. If you just pull back and just look and Google some news articles, New York Life Insurance getting in on the game. All these big Goldman Sachs, big banks, big insurance companies, they're starting to allocate 1%, 2%, 3% of their portfolio quietly into Bitcoin. Why? Because if they put 1% in and they goes and Bitcoin goes to zero, no big deal, right? That's 1%. Who gives a crap? But they also learned what Bitcoin is capable of, what DeFi is capable, what Ethereum is capable of, and how much people are going to willing to pay for it, how valuable it's going to be in the future if it works. Right. And for 12 years, Bitcoin has been working. So now they say, okay, we have to have Bitcoin in here because if I put 1% in Bitcoin, I'm a, you know, $100 billion company. If I put 1% in Bitcoin, I lose it. No big deal. But if Bitcoin hits, damn, I just made 10x, 15x, 30x, yep. 40x in decades.
Yep.
They're gonna say, I'd be stupid not to put 1% or 2% in.
Exactly.
So it's crazy, man.
You know, Chris, I think once people also realize, you know, for let's say baby boomers or individuals that want to balance out risk, that place money in bonds, right? Mm-hmm. And bonds pay on average 3-4%.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
Now they do. Now, it might be less 4 years from now.
And the 3-4%, thank you for even noting that. That's been the average for, you know, let's say close to a century. But now, currently, bonds are pegged to near zero, mm-hmm. right? And we're talking U.S. government bonds mm-hmm. are pegged to near zero. So bonds are paying out close to nothing. But let's be generous. Let's say they are paying about 2-3%. Once individuals realize that they can hold their money in a U.S. dollar coin, right, USDC, which mm-hmm. is their token, and that token is paying 6%, I just don't understand why anyone would buy a bond. I literally cannot understand because U.S. dollar coin is not even an investment. It's like holding the US dollar in your bank account
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and you're making 6%. Why on earth would anyone buy a bond? Or is there something I'm missing here, Chris? Because I really don't see how.
I've been looking for that answer for the past year, Dr. Hounds. I have no idea. And you know what I think it is? We don't like change. We don't. No one likes change. We're very resistant towards change. A body in motion tends to stay in motion, and a body at rest tends to stay at rest. And so when something radical comes in, the first reaction people have is resistance, hesitancy, inquisitiveness. And it's those people who are inquisitive and learn about it and poke it and prod it and learn from it and say, hey, guys, this is actually worth something to us. Then you have one who jumps in, two who jumps in, four who jumps in. And eventually, the whole crowd will eventually jump in. But right now, we're at the stage where people are looking at cryptocurrencies, USDC, Tether, which is another US dollar-backed coin. And they're starting to poke at it and prod at it. And people like Dr. Hans are saying, guys, I can get 6% here. If I just put my money in here, I'm going to grow my money 6% a year. Inflation rate is 3%. My bonds are yielding 3-4%. I'm generating money and it's just sitting there. It's not even in a stock. It's not even in a bond. It's just sitting in US dollar currency.
it is. And oh my gosh, Chris, once people realize this, it's gonna, like, bonds are done. And there are several trillions of dollars in bonds. Like, there's the estimate that there's probably about hundreds. 50 to 100 trillion dollars in bonds. All of that is going to move into the crypto space.
Mm-hmm. Slowly
at first. Surely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the early adopters are going to benefit immensely. Now, being that we have, you know, Polkadot, we have Cardano, obviously Ethereum, you know, was the first in terms of smart contracts.
Yeah.
Do you think the newer, let's call them projects, Polkadot, Cardano, I've heard about Solana, but I haven't really studied it, you know, as well. But do you think the newer projects could, you know, take market share away from Ethereum, or do you think Ethereum can keep up, right? It's almost like some individuals try and say Bitcoin and Ethereum are like the MySpace and Friendster, and that there's a Facebook coming. Mm-hmm. But I always say, you know, don't say that for Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is like the OG. Like, you know, but what are your thoughts? I'm curious.
I would say Bitcoin is email, right? And you've always had email, whether it was your AOL, whether it was Yahoo account, now it's your Gmail account. It's email. It's going to be with you, right? Now, it might be a different flavor. It might update. It might upgrade. It might be a little fancier, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little better spam filter, a little bit of, you know, anonymity for Bitcoin, right? But it's not leaving. It's got one thing and one thing only. It does what it's supposed to do, right? And be digital gold. And it does it really well. And it doesn't make updates. It makes updates so slowly. Right, it doesn't change. And there's beauty in that, because people, like I said, they don't like change. On the flip side, you've got Ethereum and all these alternatives. And Ethereum is going to be eaten away by Cardano and Polkadot and maybe Solana. I, too, have not read enough about it. I mean, shoot, I don't have enough time in the day to do my 9-to-5 job and then read up on crypto, right? So the short answer is, yeah, those other coins, I call them third generation. Right? Because just kind of how it developed. Your first generation was Bitcoin. Your second generation was Ethereum and maybe some other things that were around in 2017. But Ethereum took the lead. It had the first mover capability, right? And now you give it enough time, Cardano, Polkadot, and these others, these are third generation. And they will eat at some of Ethereum's profits. Why is that? Because Ethereum is it's a digital program. So its faults that it has, some of them can never change. Some of them can be changed really quickly and really as easily. And there's a problem with Ethereum. For example, one of the problems people have with Ethereum is that when a lot of people are using Ethereum for all of their projects to keep them running day to day, it can cost a variable amount of fees to keep it going, right? Some people say, well, Chris, why isn't Ethereum free? Well, I mean, someone's got to pay for this, right? You can't just create this for free. You gotta pay a little bit to keep the network secure, just like you pay Bitcoin in fees to keep it secure and keep the miners doing what they're supposed to do, which is secure the network. But anyways, Ethereum's fees, just like Bitcoin's, run high and wild. Could you imagine trying to run a store where your electricity bill one day is $5, the next day is $150, and then the next day is $2,000, and the next day is $3? Like, you don't know how much money to allocate to keep your store running, because you don't know how much electricity is going to keep costing, right? Mm. And so that's one of the problems with Ethereum. And they're trying to tackle that by changing it from a proof of work system, which is how Ethereum has been running for years, where you put a lot of energy and you show that Ethereum works by doing something called proof of work. You show the work that is being done. It's energy intensive and the fees can change wildly. They're changing it from that to something called proof of stake, which is a different kind of proving its value, or it's just a different modality. I can't really dive deep into the nitty gritty for, you know, I just want to keep it basic. But that transition is happening right now. And there's a lot of problems. Ethereum's been trying to say, oh, we're moving to proof of stake. We're still moving. They've been saying that for a year and a half. They've been saying we're trying to move to proof of stake because the fees are going to be less. That's just one issue, is that Ethereum keeps trying to morph and change in order to keep up with the times, to keep up with the problems that people are having with it, right? And some of the old projects fall by the wayside. It makes it incompatible. It makes it difficult. And so Ethereum is spinning a lot of plates at the same time just to be a player, right? And as it's growing in popularity, more people are using it and it becomes a little bit more unstable. The fees get higher. You know, a lot more people are griping about this issue, that issue, and try and fix it. And guess what? Vitalik and his team are trying real hard to, they're trying to keep and prop it up, and it's always changing and moving. Bitcoin, it's been the same for years, Dr. Hans. It made one, maybe two updates, right? It hasn't changed at all. It's the same Bitcoin you got in 2009. It's the same Bitcoin you got now, right?
Your description of Bitcoin as a tank, when we're, you know, looking at the vehicles, I think it's so accurate. And literally, for individuals who've done some reading on Bitcoin, you'd understand that Bitcoin is coming in and it's plowing down the centralized financial system. It's plowing down governments who think they can just print boatloads of money and rob you know, wealth slowly from citizens.
It's unstoppable. You need to learn to harness it,
yeah,
or get run over by it.
Yeah. Bitcoin is coming for anything that stands in its way.
Yeah. So Ethereum, unfortunately, is different, right? It's always changing, trying to keep up with the times, trying to keep everyone happy. Because guess what? If enough people aren't happy, Cardano's right there. He said, hey, guess what? We've spent hundreds of millions of dollars, not hundreds of millions, but we spent a couple million dollars and we wrote 81 plus research papers and we made this even better Ethereum. We call it Cardano. It's even better. It's got cheaper fees. It runs faster. You can put more projects. You can do it faster. We're even better. So get ready, Ethereum. You better keep your game up and you better do it fast and you better upgrade faster than everyone else upgrades, because guess what? Cardano, Polkadot, Solana, some other of these platforms, they're ready. They're ready to get some of your shares, bro. And all it takes is a couple of people who do projects on Ethereum say, oh man, this takes too long. Oh, this is too costly. Ugh. They look at Cardano and they say, wait, what? This is cheaper? I can run more projects? I can do things easier? I can make life easy? I can become more rich, I guess, in making projects? You know, they're going to move. They're going to move right to that next project, the third generation.
I heard that to port a project from Ethereum to like a Cardano is like one click. When I heard that, I was like, what?
Yep.
I was like, what? One click? I was like, whoa.
That's what Cardano did. They said, guess what, baby? You don't like it? One click, you come right to us. Don't you worry. We'll catch you. We'll take care of you. Right.
It'll be interesting and exciting to watch.
It's crazy. And Cardano, for example, they're giving people and they don't care about people in America in terms of making projects, right? They care about the people in Africa. They care about the people who truly are unbanked, who are truly having a hard time with the human right to personal finances. And one of the problems people have is to have an identity out there in the world, in Africa, in China, in farmland, in Mongolia. It's hard to have an identity. Here, you have an identity with your social security card, your passport, right? And you can sometimes get a loan, have access to the bank, right? If you're lucky. So Cardano is tackling that. We're going to give people identity, and they're working with Ethiopia right now, and they just launched a project, and they're starting right now to give millions of kids and hundreds of thousands of teachers the ability to post their grades in the Cardano blockchain.
So like this decentralized ledger of actual grades, which then you can use literally globally, right?
Wow. Right, right. And again, it just takes one click for a university to jump into the Cardano network, right? Cardano's easy. You just plug it in. It's made for you. It's third generation. It knows how to make your life easier. You don't have to rearrange your whole digital computer system from Ethereum to Cardano. It's boom, one click. And now imagine over the next 5, 10, 15 years, you're going to have grades, diplomas, college degrees, master's degrees, doctorates on a decentralized ledger that anyone can look at and know with certainty, whether it's anonymous or not, this person graduated college for sure. If I want to give a job to that guy, I know I can because he graduated from University of Ethiopia, right? He graduated from Harvard. I know that. He didn't fake his grades. If you want to get credit, you look at him, you look at who that person is, their credibility on the Cardano network. Now, these farmers, these high schoolers, these hard workers in African countries have the same social ability to have credit, social credit. Like you and like me, right? They can now start to have a little bit more access to banking, a little bit more access to trust from a third party to give them money so that they can be productive and provide for their family. So, Absolutely. It's coming.
Fantastic. Yeah, I need to look more into Cardano. I hold some Cardano in my Coinbase wallet. But not a substantial amount.
right now, again, look, that's 5-10 years down the road, right? That's 5-10 years down the road, but it's cheap now. So it's okay to hold a little bit because they're on the right path. If you like that idea of that example that I provided you, then you'll like Cardano because that guy, that's all he lives for. Him and his team, they live to provide that to people.
That's phenomenal. And I hope they can extend that to property rights in, you know, like Africa where, four people can say, this land is mine and there's no proof of the land title and being able to go behind the back of someone and go pay like a government official for them to say, oh, no, the land is for this person. If we had that on a decentralized blockchain. Woo.
It's as good as gold, or it's as set in stone, right? It's
set in stone. Yeah. It can never, ever, ever be edited. Now for the individuals listening, I'm sure some of them have heard about NFTs. Can we talk about NFTs briefly and then transition into the almighty Doge?
Yeah. So I guess just a quick rundown. What is an NFT, right? It stands for non-fungible token. And what does the word fungible mean? Well, I mean, I had to Google it at some point, but it means it's basically interchangeable, something that's interchangeable. And the best way I can show this is the United States dollar, right? You think of a $1 bill, right? Anybody who's got a $1 bill can go and pay for that good or item with that $1 bill, right? It doesn't matter if it's crinkled, if it's got a little marking on it, right? As long as it looks pretty much like a $1 bill, people will take it. It is fungible. You can replace it. You can interchange. My dollar is worth $1. Your dollar is worth $1. We can exchange them. They're both worth a dollar. Mine's not worth $1.02. Yours isn't worth 98 cents. They're interchangeable, right? And so what does it mean to be non-fungible? Well, it means I have something that is unique, that no matter how many times you replicate this thing, I have the one and only thing of it, right? You can take a picture of it. It's not the same. You can copy and paste it. It's not the same. It's not the same because I have a special cryptographic token that is attached to the thing, right? That makes it one of one. So if I make a piece of art and I slap an NFT on there, a non-fungible, non-interchangeable token on that piece of art, I now, if there's only one token and I slapped it to that one piece of art, it is a receipt. It is a digital coat token that says, this is one of one. It's unique. And people say, well, Chris, can't I just copy that token? No, you can't. Just like you can't break blockchain and Bitcoin. You cannot break this token. Okay, Chris, well, so what? Well, why do people buy art? Why do people buy things when trading cards, right? Because it's valuable. It's valuable because it's scarce. Painters and artists, their art isn't worth shit until they die. Why? Because now they're dead and they can't make any more art. So whatever art is out there, that's all you got, right? So Picasso's work became extra valuable after he died. Van Gogh, it became extra valuable after he died, right? The idea of scarcity, just like in the art world, is now being applied into the digital world through the use of NFTs, through the use of this digital token. You can slap onto a picture, slap it onto a video, slap it onto a digital trading card, and it's now unique. And there is a market for anything. And currently, go on topshots.com and you can see the NBA doing their best with NFTs. They're slapping NFT tokens on LeBron James' dunk, posterizing some poor soul on, you know, some, you know, Zion Williamson just absolutely demolishing someone on a slam dunk. And they slap an NFT and there's only one of one digital clip. You can copy and paste it on your computer if you want, but you can't get that token. And so guess what? Because you're the only one who's got that NBA licensed one of one unique digital clip, you can sell it if you want. And I guess what? There are people who are willing to pay up to $200,000, $300,000 for the rights to have that token of LeBron James posterizing some poor soul. And it's out there. NFTs create digital scarcity. And trading cards is one aspect of them. There's a couple more examples, but I'll just kind of pause there.
Yeah, you all, it's phenomenal. You know, this gentleman, Gary Vaynerchuk, he is in the process of releasing an NFT. And what he's doing is he is tokenizing, you know, tickets to his events and access to have one-on-one meetings with him, or for certain number of people to be able to have like Zoom conferences with him. And he's tokenizing all of this.
This dude is passionate. If you ever Google this guy, he is so passionate.
So all of a sudden, there's a fixed supply of each of these tokens. So he knows that, hey, if I'm selling this one-on-one meeting, right? Let's say someone purchased it for $10,000. There's a market for that. So if the person hasn't attended the one-on-one meeting, the person can hold on to it. Mm-hmm. Imagine, I'm thinking about this right now. Let's imagine I bought a one-on-one meeting with Gary V. And I say, you know what? With the rate that Gary is going, he might be a billionaire in 10 years. So I'm not going to use the token. I'm just going to keep that one-on-one meeting for 10 years. I'll just hold on to it. You know, and guess what? 10 years from now, if Gary is a billionaire or a multi-billionaire, that token is not going to be worth $10,000, right? How much would, you know, a one-on-one meeting with Warren Buffett cost? There are people, the last one, I believe it went for like $1 or $5 million or so. So all of a sudden, and that was just a lunch with Buffett, all of a sudden, this unique token which a person is purchasing for, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 could be worth hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in the future as the value of Gary increases. It's phenomenal. And you all, this is just one example. There are celebrities that will create their own tokens. I mean, I believe Jake Paul has already done it. Jack Dorsey, you know, tokenized his tweet.
His first tweet. Yeah. First tweet on Twitter.
Elon Musk's wife sold an NFT. And oh man, there's going to be a Dr. Hans token someday. Someone say amen. Oh my gosh, it's phenomenal.
Actually, you know what? I think this might be a good time. So I was going to wait to the end, but since we're talking about digital scarcity, I went ahead and I bought you an NFT. I'm serious right now. I didn't tell you this at all up until right now. So I went on and I bought you a website. It's an unstoppable domain. I don't know if you've run into this in your research so far, but it's a website domain that is decentralized. So when people go on right now, the way they do it now, they go on GoDaddy.com, they go to AWS, they have to pay. And if GoDaddy doesn't like your website, they can shut it down, right? Mm. Unstoppable Domains is a website that you can create NFTs, whatever you want to do. It's your website. Go ham, right? Do what you want. But it's decentralized. So if no one likes it, no one can shut it down. And I've got one for you. And it's called, and you can search. You can't go on it right now because you haven't built anything. But you can go to the investingtutor.crypto, and that's going to be yours, baby. I purchased it. I got to find a way to give it to you so you can have it, so that just like you have the investingtutor.com that some, you know, AWS is running, there's going to be one with Dr. Hans on it, and it's .crypto.
That is, wow, Chris, thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow. You all, that was a complete surprise. Oh my God.
Hey man, when you get invited to somebody's house, you bring a gift, right? That's what I'm doing. I got invited to this podcast. Wow. I said, let me get something nice for him. It didn't cost me much money. And you know what? Let me just kind of give you a glimpse on what you can do on your website. So Dr. Hans, if you wanted to buy an NFT, right, and you wanted to show it off, right, for whatever, you can put it on that website. People can look at it. Cool. They can try and copy it, but you've got the one copy. It's yours. It's the NFT. So you can have a little art gallery if you want on that website. Number two, if anyone wants to pay Dr. Hans in Bitcoin, crypto, money, right, tip, whatever, you can set up an easy way so that all they have to do, you've got your little barcode right on your website. You can just tell that person, send it to the investingtutor.crypto. All your digital wallets and your can be linked to that particular .crypto. So bada bing, bada boom. It's one easy way of getting payments. It's an easy way of having your own art gallery. You can the world has just been opened up, and those are a couple examples, and that website is going to be yours. I made my own. I got to start building on it too, because I got a little excited. I was like, I got to grab one. I tried looking for Amazon.crypto. That ain't happening.
Someone picked it up already. Probably
they're not letting the big ones go. It says, this is not available. You're crazy. Don't even think about it.
Oh my gosh. Wow, Chris, thanks so much again. So thoughtful. So thoughtful.
Yeah. So, one more example of NFTs. Mm-hmm. If you're a music artist, or if you're an artist in general, for example, Beeple, you've heard about Beeple. He was kind of famous about a month and a half ago or something. So this guy, he grinded every day doing a digital piece of art for the past like 3-5 years, right? Whatever came to his mind, he drew it, and he made sure every day he drew something. Well, guess what? Wow. Each one of those paintings, that he turned them into digital art. He made an NFT token out of it. People started buying it. It started becoming famous. Word around the street in the crypto universe was like, oh man, you got to get a piece of Beeple's art. Beeple, right? All of a sudden, he goes on a Christie's auction. Okay. Christie's. Okay. That old man, kind of like fuddy-duddy old money Christie's auction and sells his biggest project to date, which was an NFT that has all of his pictures on one big poster, digital poster, I guess. And he sold that to Chris. He auctioned it off at Christie's. And that thing went for, I want to say, $69 million.
$9 million, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy. Not only that, here's the best part about your NFTs now. When an artist just makes that deal, if that's a regular piece of art, okay, he makes that money one time. But with this NFT, he gets 10% every time that painting gets sold somewhere else. So if that owner says, I don't like this poster anymore, I'm going to sell it for more money, he can go put it on auction, and it doesn't matter how much it goes for. Guess who's getting 10% automatically right into his bank account? Beeple. Thanks to the digital nature of an NFT, you can program that little bit into that NFT. And now he's making 10% anytime that thing switches hands.
It is massive. And a lot of artists, entertainers, creatives are going to leverage NFTs and digital tokens in this new digital world. You know, you all, we know the internet is here. What's been missing is, you know, digital currencies or a way to transfer value or ways to program transactions that enable us to, you know, exchange value. And that's what crypto is looking to do. Bitcoin is the OG, the tank that's coming in and plowing through any fiat in its way. Ethereum is coming through as the Ferrari looking to help, say the ecosystem to create different decentralized apps. But hey, you know, Ferrari is not alone. There's Tesla, there's, you know, Maserati, there's a Bugatti, right? Those are the polka dots and the Cardanos. They are also coming in looking to take their share. You all, it's just such an exciting time to be alive, but I'll be remiss if we don't talk about the almighty Doge. And oh, Chris, before we dive into this, I purchased $1,000 worth of Doge yesterday, and
did you buy the dip?
yeah, and then yep, absolutely. and before we dive into Doge, I made the mistake, which I you know, and I'm not trying to skew your thoughts because I want your genuine thoughts, but I made the mistake in the beginning of, you know, listening to kind of like the buzzwords you hear on like a CNBC or Wall Street Journal. It's a joke. It's a joke. It's a joke.
Yeah.
Till you realize there's a shift happening. So I'm curious, where do you stand? Are you at it's a joke? Did you try and look into this a little bit more? What are your thoughts on the almighty Doge?
Well, you know, my personal experience with Doge is that when I signed up for Robinhood, they gave me a free stock. It was Chewy. Then the pandemic hit and Chewy went up. And I was like, oh, I made a nice little penny with Chewy. And so I threw it all from Chewy. I threw it all into Doge. It wasn't much. It was like 40, 45 bucks, right? It was nice because I made, it was like 20 bucks when I first got it. And then I threw in a Doge. And then Doge pumped like crazy in January and February. I was up to 140, 150 bucks. I was like, I'm out. This is too crazy. When I learned about Doge, I said, no, this is insane. The fundamentals of Doge are ridiculous. It is a meme. It's a joke. Blah, blah, blah. Right. So I don't know what to think anymore, Dr. Hans, because enough people are believing in this thing that it is becoming a reality. And it sounds two-faced because I say this with Bitcoin and people just turn around and be like, Chris, why are you crapping on Doge? It's the same thing in my eyes, right? Like, I don't understand why people are going crazy with Bitcoin. And then you're over here saying, Doge, don't do it. It's a, you know, it's a bubble ready to burst. They're like, I don't see the difference. The difference for me, and I still believe it to this day, is that Bitcoin is a capped supply of something. Right? Ethereum is a capped supply of something. In fact, they're burning it. They're actually decreasing the supply, and they change it. Honestly, it was uncapped and then it was capped, and now they're burning some. So like, it's always changing the rules. Bitcoin, it's capped. It'll always be capped. If they change the rules, it's not Bitcoin, right? That's the rules of Bitcoin. It is 21 million. That's it. Hard cap. Doge is never ending. It is always making more Dogecoin every minute, every month, every year. And the rules haven't really changed. And so I look at that and say, okay, if there can potentially be infinity amount of Doge, how is that different than fiat? Right? If the government can just print trillions of dollars, how is that any different than Doge? What I mean by that is, if I put money in there and the incoming supply starts rapidly increasing more than what I have, my value is going to diminish as time goes on. But we're in this wave now where there's all this hype and there's all this buzz around Dogecoin, whether it be thanks to Elon Musk, the number is going up. People are on Twitter are saying, we're going to buy enough and put enough hype. It's going to reach $1 soon. Let me just remind everybody. I sometimes have to remind myself of this too. There are hundreds of billions of Dogecoins out there. About 60 to 90%, about 90% is owned by about 10 accounts. Okay. So think about the hundreds, the thousands of people who have Doge and think they're going to become billionaires. Just wait until some of those big players remember their key and cash out. Okay. Because they are going to rein Dogecoin back into the system, right? As more people are trying to buy it up, and the supply seemingly starts to shrink. Wait until they dump hundreds of billions of Doge back into the market. You're going to go right back down to 0.03, 0.001 cents a coin, right? And everyone who YOLO'd in there, everyone who put thousands of dollars, who took credit that they can't pay back, to YOLO into Doge, thinking it's going to be believed into existence to a dollar or more, be ready, because that pop of that bubble is going to be a much more dramatic and hurtful pop than something like Bitcoin or Ethereum. That pop of Doge has the potential to ruin lives so much harder than Bitcoin or Ethereum. The reason I say that is because you see Bitcoin drop tens of thousands of dollars in a span of a week, and it jumps right back up because there are big boys who now believe in Bitcoin, big boys who are going to buy the dip. And the floor that Bitcoin can reach is so much higher than the floor that Doge can bottom out. So although right now there's a lot of hype, I've seen this before. I've seen it before with all these other crap coins out there. They pump, they pump, they pump, they dump. And they dump hard. I really hope Elon Musk has got the wherewithal, the cachet, the clout, the personality, the following, so that enough people can believe it into existence so that they create a new floor for Doge, so that when that bubble inevitably pops, just like every bubble pops, just like Bitcoin pops, just like Ethereum pops, that the floor is not decimating. It's not life-changing, right? I hope that happens, but I'm not a believer in Doge because of the fundamentals. I'm into Bitcoin for the economics of it. It's a scarce, absolute supply. Doge is infinity. I don't believe in that. I'm sorry. I might as well just put my money in fiat. It's not going to pop like Doge will.
Yeah. By comparison, Bitcoin has a tremendous exponential growth. When comparing it to, you're absolutely right. I view Doge as a unique experiment.
Yeah.
It's a fun experiment. Mm-hmm. The reason I invested in Doge is because I wanted to remind myself that, hey, it's okay to not always be prim and proper. And, you know, it's okay to be a little bit laid back, you know?
Sure.
That was my thought process around it. That was one of the reasons why I decided to take a small amount of money. I mean, the amount of money that I've put into Doge is probably less than 0.5% of crypto holding. So it's like, you know, so tiny. But it's like an experiment. And so that was one reason why I invested in Doge. Like, hey, stop being too uptight and prim and proper. Like, you know, it's okay to have fun. That was one. Number two, when I saw the tweet with Elon Musk saying that they are going to fund a SpaceX trip literally to the moon with Doge and put a literal Doge on the moon. And this is the word, the sentence from the team. This mission will demonstrate the application of cryptocurrency beyond Earth's orbit and set the foundation for interplanetary commerce. They are literally taking Doge to the moon and then they are transacting with Doge across the planet. Woo! I'm like, hey, let me at least be part of that mission. Like, this is my ticket. This is the cost of admission. Like,
sure.
It's a fun thing to, like, I'm not buying Doge looking for Doge to make me a multi, you know, millionaire. I believe Bitcoin will do that.
yeah.
With its supply. And for anyone listening, I'm not saying Bitcoin is going to do that over the next 2-3 years. I'm holding onto Bitcoin forever. The generations that will come after me will be given one rule: do not sell the Bitcoin. Borrow against it, stake it, do whatever you want to do, but never sell the Bitcoin. Bitcoin is literally like having
Manhattan
or oceanfront property in the Hamptons, or, you know, wherever you can think of, you know, that is super expensive, rare real estate. That is the equivalent of Bitcoin, because we are only always going to have 21 million of those individual tokens or coins, not an additional one more. So yeah, the generations that are going to be coming after me will be given, the will is going to have in bold, never sell Bitcoin.
And you know what? You can probably throw your Bitcoin into a trust fund through an Ethereum or Cardano smart contract, and it never gets released.
You're speaking the language. Oh my gosh, you just created a use case for smart contracts.
Yeah.
I place the will in the smart contract to make sure that they never can sell the Bitcoin. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Wow. What I'm an telling you. Incredible use case. Wow. Yeah.
Imagine what you can do with your will if it's in a blockchain. Immutable, unchangeable, always verifiable, yet never unable to change, right? Unless certain conditions are met. That's crazy.
What a fantastic time to be alive. Chris, this has been phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Chris, last time we spoke, we talked about the possibility of you creating your own social media channel.
Yes.
Wanted to circle back, see, did you create that? If not, you know, do share where the listeners can connect with you, because once again, this has been absolutely phenomenal. And hey, man, when that trip happens with SpaceX, remember, I bought my ticket for admission.
Hey, man, as much as I'm hating on it, I got a fraction of a percent. of my portfolio.
So you're going to be part of this experience. Still,
hey, man, look, I don't have zero. You can risk assess anything. Mm. And if you can risk assess anything, you can put a percentage appropriate amount of money into that thing. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Right. It's not absolute zero, but it's point, you know, something of a percent. Yeah,
0.00.
Yeah. So I took your advice and I had some trouble, but I got myself a little Instagram here.
There we go.
I got it running the other day.
While you share it. Yep. What's the...
Well, it's probably not too far from you. You can catch me at Crypto Tutor on Instagram.
Amazing. Oh my gosh. That is amazing. Crypto Tutor.
Hey man, you know what they say? Imitation is the highest form of flattery, right?
Brother, I love it. You all, Crypto Tutor. And I love the image. Oh my gosh, that display picture.
That little baby Yoda holding his Bitcoin.
You all go right now to Crypto Tutor on Instagram. Chris, he is a wealth of knowledge. And I'm just so excited to watch your growth. Brother, thank you so much for taking the time. This was absolutely phenomenal for joining.
Absolutely.
Me.